I'm here at the Convention for Biological Diversity in Egypt, and I'm here with Lim Leeching from Third World Network. So I'm wondering if you can explain a little bit some of the issues that are going to be discussed and what are some of the major topics that you, for example, are following.
Yeah, I think one of the key topics that the convention and its Cartagena Protocol on biosafety, as well as the Nagoya Protocol on access and benefit sharing, these three treaties will be concerned and discussing and putting a lot of attention to the issue of synthetic biology, which has been discussed at the CBD since at least 2010. Some of the key things that are up for discussion in the next 2 weeks, I think paramount is the idea that because developments are proceeding very quickly in the field of synthetic biology with new research and new technologies perhaps coming into the pipeline quite rapidly, that people are finding it hard to keep up with all these new developments. Therefore, proposals are on the table for a process for horizon scanning, what is called horizon scanning, to look ahead, to anticipate what's coming up in the technology, and of course within the context of the CBD, is to ensure that anything that is developed doesn't have an adverse impact on biodiversity or on the peoples, such as indigenous peoples, who have been the guardians of biodiversity thus far.
What kind of developments are actually happening right now in synthetic biology? For people who are not familiar with synthetic biology, what are some of the things happening in, you know, on the ground in certain places?
I think one of the key issues, of course, is that of there's been a lot of excitement over techniques of genome editing, such as CRISPR-Cas. You know, this is a real fast-moving developments which allow scientists to do much more than before with genetic engineering. And one of the applications is this what is called gene drives, gene drive technology, which we should perhaps call exterminator technology, because some gene drives have the potential to eradicate whole populations or even whole species. So this makes it a very powerful technology. And it will be one of the things that the parties to the CBD will discuss at this meeting here in Sharm el-Sheikh. Many civil society organizations have been calling for a moratorium or at least a pause, calling for the scientific community to take this pause to really see what we need to put in place before any release of such gene drives organisms occurs. And this is the call to parties of the CBD as well, to say, who have the power to take a decision and say, yes, we need to not have any release of gene drive organisms so that we can ensure that we have certain things in place. For example, can we do a proper risk assessment? Because the challenges are quite different from conventional GMOs. Why is this?
How are they different? What exactly is a gene drive? Let me just ask you that. What is it and why is it of concern to civil society groups?
I mean, gene drive organisms are GMOs, but they have been genetically engineered to basically spread a particular trait, which could be a population suppression or eradication trait, or population alteration trait. It overrides the natural laws of inheritance, so instead to increase the chances of it spreading through the population, so that you have this very, very, that's why it's called, you know, also genetic forcing, for example, in French, because it forces that trait through the population. So you can imagine that if this trait that is engineered would be to suppress a population, what the implications could be if it spreads. And the intention of gene drives is really to spread and persist. This is their very characteristic. And this is what makes them different from conventional GMOs. We've been used to dealing with GM crops, for example, in the field, which are cultivated fields. But with gene drives, it can spread to wild populations as well. And so this is something to be concerned about because of the potential ecosystem impacts, not to mention the implications for you know, socioeconomic implications and the ethical considerations as well. So many organizations are calling for a moratorium. They're saying, look, we don't know yet. We don't have actually a full transparent global regulatory system in place that can deal with this. I think one important point that needs to be raised is that because they have such potential to spread, there is very likely to be what we call unintentional transboundary movement, which means that they will cross borders. So then the Cartagena Protocol, for example, which establishes a principle of prior informed consent or advance informed agreement, it's very difficult to operationalize in a situation where many, many countries may be involved. So we need to be able to understand how do we get agreement, joint agreement, from all potentially affected countries before any release is even contemplated. And these arrangements are not in place now. There are no specific governance arrangements, and this is what why we need a moratorium to be able to consider fully the full implications of any release of such organisms into the environment.
One of the arguments in support of gene drives is that it would be a shame not to be able to do research and find out what would actually happen. And so if you propose a moratorium, research into how these organisms work would not be able to continue. Can you tell me what you have to say about that?
Well, I think there are different views on this. There are obviously there have been calls for a complete ban on these technologies. There have been some groups that have said that, and they may well be justified in saying that. But I think, at least from our perspective, the key concern is that we don't want a release into the environment because of all the potential implications. And this would include also field releases, whether it's for an experimental field trial or. So I think then we have to be honest. It's like, can we actually do the risk assessments? And what procedures do we have in place to be able to, for example, make better use of modeling, or to be able to understand fully the ecosystems and all the potential ramifications of such technology being in the environment? So we need to relook also at our risk assessment procedures that we have currently in place. The other key issue then, of course, is to have to look at the issue of contained use, because currently all the research is happening in laboratories, but there is a risk, of course, of inadvertent release or accidental, unintentional release because there's a lab accident, or just because, and these things happen. We know this happens. Even in the highest security labs, there have been incidences where researchers working on very contagious pathogens, for example, has led to release. The last case of human transmission of smallpox was from a lab accident. So, and this then points to the fact that we need to ensure that we have strict contained use regulations for all the research that's happening with gene drive organisms. Right now, we don't have any international standards on this. In the first place, there are no internationally agreed contained use standards. There are some de facto standards, of course, that are provided by bodies like the WHO and the US National Institutes of Health, for example. But there's nothing specific on gene drive organisms, and we feel that this would need to be done as well. And therefore, again, here we come to a situation where we should have a pause, we should have a moratorium to be able to fully assess our capacities to deal with this technology, whether it's in contained use or not. Yeah.